trailer. I'm supposed to meet her there. We'd best get moving then.
She slams the door. I'm no stranger to the dynamics of a small town. Still, it's disconcerting that the first person I meet knows where I'll be living before I do. She puts the van in gear and pulls onto the road. The interior smells of exhaust and cigarette smoke. She's got the radio on, but the reception is bad, and there's more static than music. For the span of a full minute, the only sound comes from the rattle of something loose and the thump of wipers that need replacing. On the outskirts of Roaring Springs, she glances at me in the rearview mirror.
I know most of the Amish in the area.
She pronounces the word Amish with a long A.
Ain't seen you around before.
I just arrived from Ohio.
We don't get too many new ones.
The brakes screech when she stops for a traffic light.
What brings you all the way up here?
Bishop Schrock.
The bishop, huh?
Her eyes go back to the mirror, narrow on mine.
You heard about him all the way from Ohio?
I hear he's a good bishop, a strong leader.
I guess that's one way to put it. You one of them Schwarzenrubbers or what?
I don't bother correcting her mispronunciation. My family was, but over the years we've drifted from the old ways. My church district in Ohio, the bishop had become mild.
I reckon sometimes the old ways are the best,
she says. Do you know Bishop Schrock? I ask.
He don't speak to us English folks. I seen him in town a time or two, though,
she replies.
Kinda stands out in a crowd. Always wears black. Never seen him smile. Or heard him say hello, for that matter. I mean, if you ain't Amish, anyway. And he's got that stare. Sorta scares people off, if you ask me. I hear he runs a tight ship out there.
My dot always told me that to be worldly is to be lost. It's the first truthful thing I've said so far. When she looks at me in the mirror, her expression is perplexed.
If that's the case, you should be happy here, because Schrock is strict with all them rules.
She indicates my dress.
That gray dress you're wearing'll do fine, I suppose. A lot of the women wear black. That's about all in the way of color. From what I hear, he likes the women folk to wear their skirts extra long.
I look out the window, but I feel her studying me in the mirror.
You all alone?
She asks. My husband passed away, I tell her. Cancer.
Hate to hear that.
She clears her throat, motions to her left.
Groceries right there, by the way. They're open till 10 every day, except Sunday when they close at 5.
Through the driving snow, I see the facade of a Big M grocery set close to the highway. She makes another turn, heading north. We pass a cemetery with grass left uncut, some of the headstones leaning. A farm where a dozen or so cattle stand beneath the overhang of a tumbling-down barn. The driver makes a low sound in her throat when we approach the sign for Swamp Creek Road.
County, don't clear the gravel roads when it gets bad.
She hauls the wheel right, hits the gas with enough force to send the van into a fishtail.
Should be okay as long as I don't stop.
I'm holding on to the armrest, wondering how she plans to drop me off without stopping. She cackles as she barrels through the snow, and I realize she's not kidding.
Mrs. Bowman meeting you out here?
She asks. Yes, I reply.
Decent lady. Keeps a clean place. And always fair to the Amish. Church going, so she don't put up with no hanky-panky, if you know what I mean. Frankly, I think that's why she likes to rent to the Amish. No teenage boys, though. Especially when they do that running around thing.
Rumspringer.
They're as destructive as a herd of wild boars.
She breaks into laughter, and I hear phlegm rattle in her chest.
Course you won't have to worry about that with you being a woman and a widow to boot.
She slows the van.
Here we are. Home sweet home.
My heart drops into my belly at the sight of the mobile home. It's tiny, not much larger than a travel trailer, with pink siding striped with rust, and it doesn't look quite level. There's a bay window on the right end. From where I'm sitting, I can see that one of the panes is cracked. The steel skirting is robin's egg blue, and there's at least one panel missing completely. I silently curse Betancourt and Suggs as the van rolls to a stop.
I know what you're thinking. It looks kind of trashy, and I reckon it is. But I've been inside, and it's clean and warm. Trees are nice in the summer. Keeps the place cool.
She jams the van into park.
Looks like Mrs. Bowman beat you here. She's prompt, if anything.
I glance through the windshield to see a big red Suburban parked adjacent to a silver propane tank.
That'll be $15. Cash, if you got it.
She holds out her hand. Digging into my pocket, I pull out a couple of bills. Thank you. I reach for the handle and get out, relieved to be away from the stink of cigarette smoke and exhaust. Snow squeaks beneath my shoes as I pull out my suitcase and the box. I tuck the box under my arm and drag the suitcase through the snow toward the driver's side door. The van window rolls down. She's smoking.
You want me to wait for you?
She asks. I look at the trailer and sigh. No.
Take care.
With a wave, she backs up. The wheels spin as she pulls onto the road. I direct my attention to the red Suburban, a 40-something woman clad in a long camel-colored coat and contrasting scarf, slides out and starts toward me.
You must be Kate Miller.
Hi. I wade through the snow. Mrs. Bowman?
Nice to meet you, honey.
She sticks out her hand without removing her leather driving glove, then motions toward the trailer.
Would you like to see the interior?
I would. She shivers and looks upward at the lowering clouds.
Dreadful weather. Don't let the cold change your mind about moving here. This part of New York is gorgeous in the summertime.
The trees are nice. She tilts her head as if trying to decide if I'm being facetious, decides I'm not.
I keep a clean place here. Heat works good. Plumbing, too. I take care of it myself, and believe me, I'm careful about who I rent to.
I understand.
Let's get out of this blasted cold. Bring your suitcase and box.
She's wearing boots with 2-inch heels and wobbles slightly as she toddles through the snow. We go up metal steps, and standing on the metal deck, she jabs a key into a flimsy-looking knob lock.
I require first and last month's rent and a $100 deposit. I pay all the utilities.
She glances over at me, her eyes taking in my dress.
You won't be needing electricity, correct?
No. But I'm silently praying I'll have access to power to charge my phones. The door swings open to a living room that smells of pine sol and mothballs, faux wood paneling, gold curtains. A mustard brown sofa squats on newish beige carpeting. The air temperature hovers just above freezing.
I had the carpet put in last year,
she tells me, our footsteps muted as we walk inside.
Had it professionally shampooed last week after the last tenant moved out, so probably best if you take your shoes off when you come in.
She sniffs, her brows lowering.
I swear the last tenant kept a cat in here. Never saw the litter box, but that smell.
A bar-height counter separates the living room from a small kitchen to my right. An old-fashioned kerosene lamp sits atop the bar. The kitchen is comprised of cheap cabinets and circa 1970s wallpaper. Avocado-colored refrigerator and stove. A stainless steel sink mottled with hard water spots. A laminate table with 2 matching chairs is shoved against the bay window. A smaller kerosene lamp sits in the center, and not for the first time, I'm reminded that I'll be spending my evenings in the dark.
It's a 12-by-50-foot Liberty. I think it was built in the late 1970s. Built them solid back then.
Mrs. Bowman motions toward a narrow hall.
2 bedrooms and a bath back there. Got lamps in every room, but you'll need to buy your own kerosene.
I'm trying to think of a way to ask her about electricity without letting on that I'm planning to use it.
What about heat? I pay everything, so I'd appreciate it if you didn't crank it up too high. Hot water heater and stove run off propane. Fridge is electric. She raises her brows. That's not a problem, is it? I know you people don't use electricity. It's fine. I try to look pained, but I'm vastly relieved. I follow her to the rear of the trailer. The floor creaks beneath my feet. The hall wears the same ugly paneling as the living room. We pass a closet-sized bedroom, a twin-size bed taking up most of the space. Next is the bathroom. Someone has painted the paneling royal blue. There's a fiberglass tub with a shower curtain covered with seahorses, blue vanity with a dinner plate-sized sink and pitted chrome faucet. A medicine cabinet with a cracked mirror is mounted above the sink. I continue on, past a second exterior door on my right that leads to the backyard. The master bedroom takes up the entire rear of the trailer. It's small by any standard and contains a twin bed draped with a threadbare comforter, a closet with a sliding door, and a built-in dresser with four drawers. An alarm clock ticks from atop a plant stand that's being used as a night table. A fat candle on a plate sits on the floor next to the bed. A window unit air conditioner is jammed into the only window. I can feel the cold air pouring in from where I stand. Mrs. Bowman comes down the hall to join me.
What do you think? She asks.
It's perfect, I tell her, trying not to be depressed. I lived in some dives in my early years, but nothing as dismal as this trailer.
You'll be living here alone?
I nod. I'm a widow.
My Harold has been gone nearly 4 years now, and I still miss him every day.
She clucks her mouth.
Alzheimer's. Do you have children?
No.
Well, I don't allow pets.
She pats the suitcase-sized purse at her side.
I have the lease here if you'd like to sign. Since you have your things with you, I'm assuming you want to move in today?
Right now, if that's all right, I tell her.
Gotta love a no-nonsense Amish woman, she says. Let's sit.
A few minutes later, we're seated at the kitchen table. The simple rental agreement is 2 pages long, with a place at the bottom for us to sign and date.
You're from Ohio?
She asks, looking down at the form.
Holmes County.
I sign and date the second page and slide it over to her.
I'm looking for a job, too. Do you know of anyone hiring here in Roaring Springs? The Pancake House off the highway is always looking for waitresses.
What about Amish businesses? I ask.
Well, there aren't many left. The Amish around here keep to themselves.
Slipping bejeweled bifocals onto her nose, she signs her name with a flourish.
There's a quilt shop in town called the Calico Country Store, and a restaurant called the Dutch Kitchen. I think they're still Amish-owned. Last two left.
I'll check them out. She picks up the lease, folds it, and slides it into her purse.
I think we're all official now.
She hands me a card.
If the temps dip below zero, keep the water dripping in the kitchen. Keeps the pipes from freezing.
Another cluck of the tongue.
I need to get that skirting panel replaced.
I nod, pondering all the different ways I could kill Suggs and Betancourt.
Toilet paper only flushed down the toilet. No sanitary supplies.
Got it, I tell her.
There's no garbage collection out here, so you'll need to take it to the dump. Don't leave it out for the critters. Coyotes will come right into the yard for scraps.
She walks to the front door and opens it, shivering a little when the breeze lifts her hair.
Cats have been disappearing all over the place out here.
No problem. She steps onto the steel decking, pulling her coat tighter about her.
There's a snow shovel in the shed out back, if you want to make use of it. The closest phone is the Amish payphone on the corner.
She cocks her head at me.
Do you have some form of transportation?
Not yet, I tell her. I may pick up a bicycle.
Don't know how you people do it.
Shaking her head, she descends the steps.
Especially in winter with all this snow. Give me a call if you need anything.
Thank you. Giving a final wave, she walks away,
without looking back.
Chapter 7.
It's not until I'm alone and the events of the day settle that the enormity of the undertaking hits home. So far, everything has gone as planned, but I'm fully aware that while this first day was productive, the real work has yet to begin. Nightfall is fast approaching, and the trailer is dark, so I take a few minutes to light the lanterns. I check the heat and find that Bowman had it turned down to 50, so I crank it up to 65. I didn't bring much in the way of clothes, just the dresses and, for when I'm here alone, a heavy cardigan, sweatpants, and a couple of flannel shirts. It takes me 10 minutes to unpack and stow everything, either in the dresser or the closet. I've decided to keep my .22 and my personal phone with me at all times. I'll need to hide the other phone and the .38 in a safe place. The trailer rocks slightly when I walk to the kitchen. The flames from the lanterns throw shadows against the ceiling. I look through the cupboards. There's a mismatched set of dishes, but not a scrap of food. I'll need to make a trip to the grocery. And once again, I'm reminded that the lack of transportation is going to be a pain in the ass. I find a small pad of paper in one of the drawers and start a list. I find an electrical outlet in the living room and plug in the phone given to me by Betancourt and Suggs. Relief sweeps through me when the charge symbol flicks on. I call Suggs. The Eagle has landed.
You getting settled in okay?
So far, so good. I have power to charge my phones. I'm probably going to end up buying that bicycle, even if I can't use it on snowy days.
I can pick one up for you.
As much as I'd like to take you up on the offer, probably best if I can find one for sale by an Amish person. Might be one more way for me to make contact with the community.
I reckon that newspaper will come in handy after all.
I plan to get out and make myself known tomorrow.
Let me know if you need anything, and I'll get it done.
Next, I call Tomasetti and fill him in.
A fucking trailer, he says. I guess Suggs takes his budget constraints seriously.
It's not quite as awful as it sounds. I laugh because we both know it is. Not the best accommodations, but it's close to all the places I need to be, including Schrock's farm. He sighs.
You without electricity?
I've got access to electricity. There's a trusty little outlet here, so I'll be able to keep my phone charged.
That's something. You're keeping your .22 with you?
My new best friend. A lull ensues. I hear the TV in the background, and I know Tomasetti is watching the news. I hear the wind tearing around the trailer outside, and a pang of loneliness assails me. I haven't even been gone 24 hours, and I miss you.
Kinda quiet around here without you,
he tells me. You're not trying to tell me I talk too much, are you?
Well, now that you mention it.
Another silence falls, but it's thoughtful.
I miss you too,
he says quietly. It's cold as hell here. We might need to take that vacation when I get back, someplace tropical.
I'm going to hold you to it, so don't give me that I'm the chief and I can't get away line.
I won't.
Will you call me if you need anything, or if you get into trouble?
I will.
I'm only 8 hours away, Kate. 4 if I catch a flight out of Cleveland.
I know. Thanks. I'll call tomorrow.
Keep warm.
At first light, I'm fully dressed in my Amish garb and bundled into my barn coat, muck boots, and winter bonnet. I pack 2 of the crib quilts in a canvas bag, hoping to put them up for sale at the quilt shop in town. I'm craving hot coffee as I go through the front door and into a monochrome morning. I didn't sleep much last night. The trailer is poorly insulated and drafty as a cave. Even with 2 blankets, I couldn't get warm. I could hear the coyotes yipping in the woods to the north, but they sounded like they were right outside my window. I spent most of the night huddled beneath the blankets, cursing Suggs and his bright idea of putting me up in a trailer. But as I make my way toward Roaring Springs, I have to admit, It was a good choice with regard to logistics. The Walmart is about half a mile down the road. Roaring Springs proper is just a few blocks farther. Schrock's property is just as close, but in the opposite direction. My dumpy little trailer home is the heart of it all. At least the weather has improved. The endless blue sky boosts my spirits, and though the temperature hovers somewhere around freezing, I feel the warmth of the sun on my back. I walk at a steady clip, and it takes me just 10 minutes to reach Roaring Springs. The downtown area comprises a dozen or so 2- and 3-story brick buildings, some with interesting architecture. Most were built at the turn of the century. A few are marked with historical plaques. Despite both of those things, many are vacant, with the front windows boarded up and brick marred with graffiti. The main thoroughfare is cobblestone, but in desperate need of repair. I'm midway down the first block when I spot the sign for the Dutch Kitchen. It might have been quaint in its heyday. Those glory days are long past, evidenced by a cracked front window, an antique door in need of restoration, and a crumbling sidewalk. I recall Suggs telling me this is where Mary Gingrich works, the woman Rachel Esch had been living with when she died. I jaywalk and stop to read the whiteboard that has been set up on a tripod displaying the day's breakfast special, which is biscuits and gravy. The coffee of the day is Colombian dark roast. Hefting the bag onto my shoulder, I go inside. I'm met with the pleasant aromas of sage sausage and freshly brewed coffee. The restaurant is a narrow space with a black-and-white checked tile floor. A row of red booths line the wall to my left. To my right, a long counter with old-fashioned stools separates the dining area from the kitchen. There's a smattering of tables at the rear and a battered door marked restroom. The place is doing a decent business this morning. Locals, farmers, and merchants alike sit at the counter. A family of four shares a table at the rear. The waitress is a heavy-set blonde woman with pink cheeks and a harried expression. The second woman behind the bar is Amish, wine-colored dress, dark hair tucked into an organdy cap, hazel eyes. Her name tag tells me her name is Mary. I climb onto the nearest stool and set the canvas bag at my feet. The Amish woman glances my way. Her eyes brighten at the sight of me, telling me she's pleased to be in the company of another Amish woman. She works her way over to me. Before she can speak, I greet her in Pennsylvania Dutch.
Guter Maria.
Good morning.
Wie geht's allweil?
She asks. How goes it now? I offer a grin, continue the conversation in Deutsch.
Good, because I know if there's an Amish woman in the kitchen, the food will be good.
And if she's behind the counter, the service will be even better. Snagging a glass from behind the bar, she scoops ice, fills it with water, and sets it in front of me. For the first time, I notice the pass-through window and kitchen behind her. A young Amish man wearing a white cook's apron, with a bowl haircut and gaunt features, watches me through the opening.
I haven't seen you around here before, the waitress says. Are you visiting?
My gaze slides away from the cook, and I introduce myself.
I just moved here from Holmes County.
Nice to meet you. I'm Mary Gingrich.
You're the first Amish I've spoken to since I've been in Roaring Springs.
We'll have to remedy that now, won't we? She scans the customers, looking for coffee cups that need filling.
What brings you to New York? My husband passed a few months ago.
I add a grave note to my voice.
We'd become discontent with our church district. The diner had become high, I tell her,
meaning the district leadership had developed a loose interpretation of the Ordnung,
especially the Velleker diner, the bishop. After John passed, I realized I wanted to go back to the older traditions, a lower church.
I shrug.
We'd heard about Bishop Schrock and talked about moving, but then he got sick. I decided to make the move on my own.
All alone?
I nod.
That's a very brave thing to do.
God was with me the whole way. She nods, like-minded and understanding.
You know of Bishop Schrock, then?
A little. Things I've heard.
Well, he believes in das Altgebrach,
the old ways.
He believes in Regel und Ordnung, too,
rules and order. She lowers her voice.
Bishop Schrock still uses my dung.
It's the Amish term for shunning or social avoidance. Contrary to popular belief, the ban isn't a form of punishment. Most often it's used to induce a person to confess their sins and apologize to the church, at which point they're usually reinstated. It's brought back a lot of backsliders who might have otherwise been lost, I say. She shakes her head.
If Bishop Schrock puts you under the ban, it's for life.
A man wearing insulated coveralls and a John Deere cap enters. Mary glances toward the door and goes back into waitress mode, addressing me quickly.
Wit du wenig epes zues?
Would you like something to eat? Coffee and the breakfast special, I tell her.
Coming right up.
By the time I've finished eating, I know a lot more about the Amish community in and around Roaring Springs than when I walked in. I know that worship is on Sunday, and it's always held in Eli Schrock's barn. I know that when Mary Gingerich speaks of Schrock, it's in a hushed tone and with reverence. I strike up another conversation while she clears my dishes. I'm looking for work, I tell her. Is the Dutch kitchen hiring?
Things are slow,
she replies.
Work's hard to come by around here. Do you sew?
Yes. You might try the Calico Country Store down the street. Thanks, I will. Leaving a $5 bill on the counter, I slide from the stool and heft the bag onto my shoulder. I start for the door, but she calls out my name. Do you have a way to get to worship tomorrow? I stop and turn. I was going to walk.
Abe and I will pick you up in the buggy. We've plenty of room, and your trailer's right on the way.
I smile. See you then. Situated in the first level of a historic building at the intersection of Main and 4th Street, the Calico Country Store is the shining star of Roaring Springs' downtown. The windows are retail artistry, an Amish-style display of locally made furniture, hand-carved toys, and an iconic nine-patch quilt in burgundy and cream. The cowbell mounted on the door jingles when I walk inside. The aromas of lavender and yeast bread invite me to venture deeper. The place is a far cry from the slightly chaotic atmosphere of the Dutch kitchen down the street. This store is orderly, with a character that's uniquely Amish. The plank floors have been sanded and polished to a high sheen. The wall to my left is affixed with dozens of metal arms, from which quilts hang. I see a red and blue double wedding ring quilt, a brown and white patchwork quilt, a stunning blue and red star pattern quilt. Beyond, a wall of crib quilts in pink and yellow, lavender and blue.
They're beautiful, aren't they?
I glance right to see a pretty Amish woman standing a few feet away, admiring the quilts, same as me. She's about 50 years old, with a freckled nose and eyes as deep and green as a country pond. She's generously built, but carries the weight well.
Yes, they are, I tell her. Most of our customers are Englishers these days, she sighs. And there aren't nearly enough of them, so it's nice to see the Amish come in.
I offer her a questioning look, but she waves it off.
Downtown Roaring Springs isn't exactly a bustling retail center, she tells me.
It should be. Reaching out, I run my hand over one of the quilts.
I've never seen a prettier collection.
She stands back, studying me, while I pretend to peruse.
I know all the Amish faces around here, and I don't believe we've met.
I'm Kate Miller. I just arrived from Ohio.
It's nice to meet you, Kate. I'm Laura Hirschberger.
Her eyes brighten.
What part of Ohio?
Holmes County.
I was born in Dundee.
Uneasiness quivers through me. The last thing any undercover cop wants is for someone to be familiar with their hometown.
I've been through Dundee many times, I return easily. Is the Amish Door Village still in business? She asks.
And they still have the best meatloaf and mashed potatoes around.
Smiling, we share the moment. Two strangers longing for home and knowing they may never see it again.
How long have you lived in Roaring Springs? I ask. Going on 12 years now.
She cocks her head.
What brings you all the way up here to New York?
I give her the same explanation I gave Mary Gingrich.
Our church district had become too lenient.
I shake my head. John and I wanted to get back to the old ways. When we heard about Bishop Schrock, I shrug. But John got sick. The Lord took him before we had a chance to move. I knew it was something I needed to do on my own.
I'm sorry you lost your husband. Do you have children?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I lower my gaze. When you're Amish and childless, you're somehow diminished. I work to shift the conversation away from me. The less people know, the less chance I have of getting caught in a lie.
I met Mary Gingrich at the Dutch Kitchen earlier. Good thing she's back at work, she tuts. She and Abe were pretty broken up after that business with the Esch girl.
My cop's antenna pricks up.
The girl who died?
She tosses me a surprised look.
I read about it in the Bridge, I explain. News travels, especially when it's bad.
She shakes her head.
It was an awful thing, made worse because she was so young. Mary and Abe were just beside themselves. Fanny and Samuel, she shakes her head, were inconsolable. Bishop Schrock spent the first terrible night with them. I can't imagine losing a child. At first, everyone thought Rachel had run away, but there were all sorts of rumors flying around.
Rumors? I muster a puzzled look. But it was an accident, right? She got lost in the woods and succumbed to the cold?
That's what everyone says.
There were no customers in the shop, but she looks left and right just to make sure.
I think there was more to it.
I lower my voice. What do you mean?
Not to speak ill of the dead, but Rachel Esch was a wild little thing. Pretty as a peach, but she didn't care much for the rules and spent a good bit of time breaking them, wearing Englisher clothes and whatnot. She didn't get along with her parents, so she moved in with Mary and Abe. Didn't work out so well there, either, from what I've heard.
Rumspringer can be a confusing time for young people, I say, staying neutral, trying to keep her talking. A lot of temptation these days.
The sheriff's department has been sniffing around and asking all sorts of questions. Word around town is, Rachel wasn't out there by herself.
I stare at her, trying not to look too interested, not sure I'm succeeding.
Who? No one knows. I heard she had a boyfriend. She went to see him, got lost on her way home, and died.
How sad. I press my hand to my chest. The boy is English? Another look around.
Word is, he was older. And married.
She whispers the last word as if the walls themselves have ears.
No one knows for sure.
The police must be anxious to speak with him.
I wouldn't know, she shrugs. Most of us don't deal with the English as much. Bishop Schrock is strong on separation from the unbelieving world.
I want to keep the conversation focused on the death of Rachel Esch, but I'm not sure how to do so without garnering suspicion, and the moment slips away. The Amish woman doesn't notice and motions toward the window facing Main Street.
Before Eli Schrock became bishop, there were 6 or 7 Amish shops. We have such an entrepreneurial spirit, you know. But the government came after us with all their taxes and regulations.
She huffs a laugh. can't even put in a new front door without some kind of permit. The bishop defended us. He knows how to deal with them. But he lost. A week later, he held a meeting and told all the shopkeepers here in town that when their leases were up, they shouldn't renew. Such a shame, I say. A lot of Amish sell things from their homes or farmhouses now. Most of them make a pretty penny doing it. I have a 3-year lease here. Time's up in 10 months. She heaves a wistful sigh. I love this place. But right is right, and of course the bishop has the final say. When the time comes, I'll say goodbye to it and not look back. She laughs. Listen to me, gossiping like some old woman. It's good to know these things, I tell her. We fall silent, so I move to keep the conversation flowing. Mary and her husband were nice enough to offer me a ride to worship. Well, that's kind. Daniel and I will be there, too. I hear Bishop Schrock is a good preacher. Barely has to read because he keeps all of it in his head. I'm planning to join the church, I tell her. He's taken in many, including a few who were lost. Offering a small smile, she reaches out and pats my shoulder. He believes a strong ordnung bestows a free heart and a clear conscience. But if you came here because of Bishop Schrock, you already know that, don't you? I offer my best smile. I'm looking forward to meeting him. Well, a lot of the church districts have fallen to having worship every other Sunday. But Bishop Schrock preaches every week. You'd be wise not to miss one. I don't plan to. Sighing, she looks down at the bag in my hand. What do you have there, Kate? I was wondering if you take quilts on consignment. Ah, you're a quilter. Nodding her approval, she motions toward the rear of the shop. Let's take a look and see what you have. I follow her to an open area where a large rectangular table is set up with 5 chairs around it. There's no one else present at the moment, but I know by the sheer number of quilts for sale that most days the chairs are filled by Amish women. If the walls could speak. I set my bag on the table and pull out the 2 crib quilts. Laura assumes a deadpan expression, but I see her eyes light at the sight of the craftsmanship. She looks at me as if seeing me for the first time. That's some fine work. My ma'am and grossmutter were quilters, I say, trying not to feel guilty for passing someone else's work off as my own. I learned from an early age. She takes the quilt from me and runs her fingertips over the stitching, taking in the texture of the fabric, the intricate stitching. The colors are pretty for a little one. You just have the 2? I'm working on 2 more. 1 is nearly finished, I tell her, pleased I left them back at the trailer, which gives me a reason to return to the shop. A pink and blue tumbling block. I'm happy to take these on consignment. She tries not to look too excited, but I can tell she's more than a little impressed. I might be able to get 250 or so for them. Putting her hand on her hip, she gives me a that's my final offer look. It'll cost you 20%. 15%, and you have yourself a deal. She huffs, looks back down at the quilt in her hand, and sighs. I can tell you're from Ohio. How's that? I ask. Because we're a frugal bunch, and we can drive a hard bargain when we need to. Her stern face breaks into a grin. You have yourself a deal, Kate Miller. 15% it is. She hefts the quilt and looks at it admiringly. You'd best get to work on those others. I suspect these will go fast. Chapter 8. A quick stop at Walmart for groceries, an extra blanket, and a pair of wool socks, and I'm back at the trailer by noon. When I walk in the door, my hands and feet are numb, and I'm shivering so hard I nearly drop the key. filling the kettle with water, I set it on the stove for hot tea, using the flame to warm my fingers. After stowing the groceries, I dig out my phone and call Suggs. Did you know Rachel Esch was rumored to have had a boyfriend?
Some of the Amish hinted at it, but no one would say for sure, so I could never confirm it or identify him,
he replies.
Did you get a name?
The woman I talked to didn't know. It's just a rumor at this point, but she mentioned he may be older and married.
That's interesting as hell.
I tell him about my conversation with Laura Hirschberger. Sometimes there's a grain of truth in a rumor.
Think you'll get the chance to work on her some more?
I'll probably see her at worship tomorrow. Everyone in the community will be there, so I'll have the opportunity to meet a lot of people.
Nice job, Chief. This is exactly the kind of thing we were hoping you'd be able to do.
Whether anything will pan out remains to be seen, but it's a start. I pause. I also met the woman Rachel Esch was living with when she died.
Mary Gingrich, you work fast.
Roaring Springs is a small town. The Amish community is even smaller. I knew she worked at the diner.
Anything new?
Not really. But I'm starting to get a better picture of Schrock. I tell him everything I've learned about the bishop so far. He's very old order.
Everyone I've met seems devoted.
The only hint of discontent I heard was from the owner of the quilt shop. Apparently, Schrock told her not to renew her lease when it's up.
Sounds like him.
An unhappy follower is more likely to talk, especially if she's got something negative to say. I'll do my best to cultivate a relationship.
You get a bike yet?
No, but I will, I tell him. Mary took pity on me and offered to drive me to worship.
She drives?
I smile. A buggy.
Gotcha.
So I'll have the chance to meet her husband and their daughter, too.
Excellent.
He pauses.
I don't have to remind you to be careful, do I?
The most dangerous thing I did today was go to Walmart, I tell him. I'll check in tomorrow. I've never been the domestic type. I sure as hell don't remember the last time I made date pudding. Probably as a teenager, when my mam was still alive and doing her utmost to instill some semblance of domesticity in her unreceptive daughter. She would drag me into our big country kitchen, and my sister, Sarah, and I would help her bake. It wasn't always the tranquil ritual you might imagine. I was difficult. Sarah outshone me, which only made things worse. Still, it's a good memory. My current kitchen is a far cry from my mam's, my hands not nearly as capable as hers. But I get the job done with a good bit of sampling along the way, and the pudding turns out better than I anticipated. The entire trailer smells good, and it's blissfully warm. I bought some plastic cups, and tomorrow after worship, I'll serve the pudding with caramel sauce and chopped walnuts on top. Hopefully, it will help get things off to a good start. By late afternoon, the kitchen is cleared, the pudding is stowed in a sealable food storage bowl, and I'm pouring through the bridge for a bicycle that will make it easier to get around, at least when the roads are clear. There are no adult bicycles for sale, but there's an ad for a scooter bike, which is even better. It's an added bonus that there's a phone number, which tells me the owner is local and probably Mennonite. After bundling up, I hike it down to the Amish phone booth at the intersection a couple hundred yards down the road. The phone is inside a frame building the size of an outhouse. There are dozens of buggy wheel marks in the snow, but there's no one here now. I slide the quarter into the slot and dial. A man picks up on the second ring with an enthusiastic, "Yeah!"
"Gute Nachmittags," I say,
greeting him with the Pennsylvania Dutch words for good afternoon. "I'm calling about the scooter bike."
"It's a nice one. Aluminum, with 20-inch wheels and a basket in front for the grocery or whatnot. Good to get around on if the snow isn't too deep."
I've seen the Amish around Painter's Mill travel on kick scooters, even Amish women, and the contraptions are amazingly fast and easy to power. "How much?"
"It's used, so I'm asking 200.
"Where are you located?"
east of Roaring Springs.
My heart sinks. I'm west of town, which tells me his place is too far for me to travel on foot. I'm without transportation, I tell him. Any way you can haul it over to my place so I can take a look? I'm pretty interested, and I have cash.
The cash part is talking. Where are you located?
20 minutes later, a pickup truck pulls into the driveway. Grabbing my coat, gloves, and bonnet, I go out to greet him. He's lifting the scooter bike out of the truck bed when I meet him in the driveway. I'm Kate Miller, I tell him.
Christian Kempf.
We shake, and then he motions toward the scooter.
What do you think?
I give the contraption a skeptical look. I would have preferred black.
Most of the Amish do around here. You could paint it.
Why are you getting rid of it?
My wife and I are Mennonite now, so we don't need it.
You used to be Amish? His gaze moves away from mine.
Yeah.
I return my gaze to the scooter, pretend to study it, but it's the cellar I'm most interested in. What made you decide to leave the church? He looks down at the ground, then he shrugs.
I'm a furniture maker and sell cabinets to the builder over at Ellenberg Center. Schrock didn't like it and asked me to stop.
Must have been difficult.
Hard for the wife. He put us under the ban. Her friends won't speak with her. Our daughter.
His voice trails off, as if the words are too painful to utter. I'm about to ask about Schrock's use of Maidung, but he shakes his head.
I have a car now, so we no longer need this.
He turns his attention back to the scooter bike.
There are a few chips in the paint. Otherwise, it's in good condition. Would you like to try it?
I glance toward the road, where most of the snow from yesterday has melted. Sure. He wheels the scooter to the asphalt and offers it to me.
Keep one foot on the platform and push off with the other.
I take the handlebars, and keeping my left foot on the platform, I shove off with the right. It's awkward at first, but I know immediately that it'll be easier and faster than walking. I take it down the gravel road about 50 yards, make a U-turn, and come back. What's your bottom dollar? I ask.
Like I said, 200.
Basket's bent, I say, indicating the wire rack mounted on the handlebars.
Well, I might take 175, but that's as low as I can go without getting my wife riled up.
But he grins. I grin back. I'll get my cash. Chapter 9. Sunday morning dawns brilliant and cold, and with me rethinking the wisdom of bringing food to my first worship service. It's a small concern in the scope of things, but it kept me up last night. I don't know the congregation or its unwritten rules, and apparently there are a lot of them. I'm not even sure if my welcome will be warm. I do, however, know the Amish, and I'm well aware that they appreciate good food. While I don't want to draw undue attention to myself, I do want to make a good impression. Most important, I want to meet and speak with as many people as possible. When you're Amish, food is usually a pretty decent icebreaker. Mary and Abe Gingrich arrive 10 minutes early, but I'm ready. I've stowed the date pudding and plastic containers in 2 paper bags. Grabbing both, I go through the front door and into a morning cold enough to steal my breath. Abe has already turned the buggy around. Mary sits in the rear, along with a teenage girl, their legs covered with a hand-knitted afghan.
Guter Maria, I call out as I make my way to the buggy.
A rotund Amish man of about 50 grins at me.
Wie geht's, Alweil?
How goes it now?
Ich bin ziemlich gut. I'm pretty good. You must be Abe Gingrich.
And you must be Kate Miller.
I stop outside the buggy and offer my hand for a shake. I appreciate the ride this morning.
It's right on the way,
he tells me. I peer into the back. Hi, Mary. You look nice and warm back there.
We're plenty toasty.
The Amish woman smiles back at me.
This is our daughter, Anna.
I recall Suggs mentioning that the girl is special needs and about the same age as Rachel Esch had been. She's got a round face and chubby cheeks mottled with acne. Though she's wearing a black cape, I can tell she's overweight. Her pale blue eyes are slightly strabismus, or cross-eyed, and possess the guilelessness of a much younger child.
Hi, Anna. I reach out for a shake. Cold enough for you this morning?
The girl smiles, looking uncertainly at my hand.
Even my nose is cold.
She's shy until she gets used to people. Mary elbows her.
Go on up front with your dot, so Kate and I can sit back here and talk.
I raise my hands. Thank you, but I don't mind riding up front. The woman reaches into a slot behind her and pulls out another afghan.
Figured we might need an extra this morning.
Taking the cover, I climb into the buggy and settle onto the seat a respectable distance from Abe.
What's in the bag?
Comes Anna's voice from the rear.
Anna!
Mary exclaims. Smiling, I turn.
Date pudding, I tell her. Do you like it?
The girl's eyes light up.
It's my favorite. I helped Mom and Rachel make it once, and it was good.
I hold my smile, not even allowing myself to blink.
Is Rachel your sister?
Anna falls silent, her eyes dropping to the afghan. The woman picks up her daughter's hand and rubs it between both of hers, as if to warm it. Sighing, Mary turns her attention to me. Rachel is a girl who stayed with us for a while. She wasn't getting along with her family. We tried to help.
She went to live with God,
Anna adds.
Oh,
I feign shock. I'm sorry.
It was a bad thing,
comes Abe's voice from beside me.
Rachel was a troubled child, Mary adds.
She went out in a snowstorm and died in the cold,
Abe finishes.
How incredibly sad, I murmur.
It was truly awful and a terrible loss, Mary says. Though I'm already privy to the details of Rachel Esch's untimely death, it doesn't take much effort to show that I'm aghast at the thought of a young girl freezing to death.
It must have been devastating for her parents, I say with a shudder.
Abe clucks to the horse and jiggles the reins.
She's in a better place, he says, as the horse breaks into a working trot.
No one mentions the possibility that Rachel may not have been alone. I don't press the issue. I've probably already asked too many questions. Instead, I make a mental note to get Anna alone at the first opportunity. Mary makes small talk as Abe drives the rig onto the main road and heads north. Within minutes, we fall in behind another buggy. At the next turnoff, a third buggy pulls onto the road behind us. We pass a group of teenage boys decked out in their Sunday best, black overcoats, black flat-brimmed hats, and black trousers, walking alongside the road. The frigid air chafes my face as the horse sets a fast clip. By the time we turn into the narrow dirt road that will take us to Schrock's place, there are 6 buggies in the caravan. My cheeks are numb, and though I've pulled the afghan up to my waist, I'm shivering. I attribute it to the cold, but my nerves are stretched taut beneath my skin as we draw closer to our destination. The area is heavily treed with ancient hardwoods that soar 60 feet into the air. Abe makes a final turn. We pass a white clabbered schoolhouse, and then a massive bank-style barn looms before us like some primordial beast. The 2-story structure is painted white with a tin roof gone to rust. It's nestled in a clearing with horse pens to the right and a small pasture that slopes down to a creek on the left. The large sliding front doors stand open, and I see a dozen or so men milling about inside. Vaguely, I wonder where the women have congregated. Abe makes a U-turn and stops the buggy in front of the barn with a low whoa. A boy, not yet in his teens, goes around to the horse and, watching Abe, waits for us to disembark. Picking up the bags of date pudding, I slide out of the buggy and wait. Mary climbs down, but I can tell immediately that Anna needs assistance,
so I jump in to help. Once we're out, Abe nods to the boy, who will take the horse to the paddock, where the animal will be unharnessed, stalled, and given water and hay. Worship is a time of anticipation for the Amish, but it's also a time filled with quiet reflection and hope. Conversation is hushed and respectful. Smiles are subdued. Laughter is not appropriate, even among children. This way, Kate. Carting the bags, I follow Mary and Anna to the barn door. Some of the men have gathered beneath the overhang at the end of the building. Having grown up in Painter's Mill, I'd attended hundreds of worship services before leaving the fold. Generally, the ordained men enter first, followed by the older men, the married women, the unmarried, and finally, the teenagers. The order of things is atypical here. The women are nowhere in sight, and I remind myself that this is a different church district, a different state, and that Eli Schrock is originally from Lancaster County. I keep my gaze cast down, but I feel the men's eyes on me as I go through the door. We enter a common area, where I imagine the farm implements, wagons, and buggies are usually stored. All that has been cleared to make room for the congregation. The interior is dimly lit by several lanterns. It's warmer, but not by much. The smell of wood smoke fills the air, and I spot an old-fashioned pot-bellied stove in the corner. A boy of about 10 years of age has been charged with keeping it stoked. A scarred wooden table has been set up at one end of the main room. Dozens of backless benches have been arranged in rows, separated by an aisle. At the rear, a dozen or so chairs have been neatly arranged. Several are occupied by elderly women. "We'll put the pudding in the tack room." Mary motions to a door with a step up to a wood plank floor. Nodding, I take the two bags into a room that smells of molasses and leather. A lantern flickers from atop an oak barrel. Two women stand next to a rectangular table, already teeming with food. Pies, rustic breads, and a ham dotted with cloves that looks home-cured. Steam rises from the spout of an old-fashioned enamel coffee pot. "Hello," I say. A stout, older woman wearing a black bonnet and heavy black cape smiles at me. "You must be the widow from Ohio," I introduce myself. "Welcome to New York," the younger of the two says. "You settling in okay?" I tell them I'm renting Bowman's trailer, and the two women exchange looks. "It'll be a nice cold winter for you." They get a good chuckle out of that. The older woman jabs a thumb at the bags I brought. "What do you have there?" "Date pudding," I tell them. "Where shall I put it?"
"Just set it up there with the rest."
The older woman looks past me.
"I believe Bishop Schrock is about to begin, so we'd best get in there."
By the time we enter the main part of the barn, the last of the unmarried men and teenage boys are coming through the door, single file, and making use of the benches in the back. As is usually the case, the women are seated on one side of the aisle, the men on the other. The smell of kerosene from a large space heater mingles with the aromas of wood smoke, the food in the back room, and the lingering scents of hay and sweet feed and horses. I haven't attended a preaching service in years, but already I feel the anticipation of that first hymn building inside me. It's a reverent moment, and, though I don't know any of the people around me, a shared kinship. In unison, the men remove their hats, placing them beneath the bench upon which they're sitting. I don't feel like a cop as I take my place on the bench with the rest of the single women and visitors at the rear of the room. I'm young and Amish, and the words to the first hymn venture from the recesses of my memory. "Mer missa glawe an selvas unser, har on unser, Highland Jesu Christi, uns sakti hot, ja, sel hot sakt, ja ikt glab, sel is recht." We must believe in that which our Lord and our Savior Jesus Christ told us. Yes, that's what he said.
Yes, I believe that is right. The hymn is followed by a period of silence. I should be observing those around me, taking an inventory of the number and ages of the children present, scrutinizing those children for signs of abuse. Instead, I close my eyes, and the old prayer from Die Ernsthafte Christenpflicht, the prayer book for earnest Christians, pries into a brain that doesn't necessarily welcome it. O God and Father of all light and comfort, the words come back to me with astounding clarity and ease. When you're Amish, some things are so entrenched, become such a sacred and immovable part of your life, that you can't escape them. Worship is one of those things. And not for the first time, my roots threaten to overshadow who I am today and why I'm here, to infiltrate this group, ask questions, and hopefully glean new information that will either exonerate them from wrongdoing or put me closer to unraveling the mystery of Rachel Esch's death. I've moved on to a silent reciting of the Lord's Prayer when a male voice calls out the number of the next hymn. I open my eyes to see an older Amish man with a long salt-and-pepper beard standing at the bench where he'd been sitting. He begins to sing, and within a few syllables, the rest of the congregation joins him until everyone is standing and singing. When the second hymn is finished, the congregation falls to silence once again. The squeak of a hinge echoes within the room. The steady tread of boots thuds against the wood plank floor. I glance toward the front to see a tall, black-clad Amish man approach the preaching table. His beard is shot through with gray and reaches his waist. He moves with a masculine grace and a certain physical power that reveals he's comfortable with who and what he is. When he looks out at his audience, I can't help but notice piercing eyes the color of a nor'easter, a full mouth that would have been feminine on another man. His face seems to be cut from sculpted leather, the kind that's weathered sun and sleet in equal measure, but never lost its sheen. I know immediately that the man is Eli Schrock. Looking at him, I'm reminded of a painted portrait, the kind in which the eyes follow you, judging and weighing, and never look away. I know that's not the case, but in the seconds before he speaks, I feel his eyes on me, as if he's sought me out. I actually experience a rise of alarm, as if he knows my weaknesses, my lies, the sins of my past. He sets large hands against the preaching table, leans slightly, and begins the Anfang, the introductory sermon, in a deep, sing-song voice. For the next 3.5 hours, Schrock takes his congregation through the main sermon, several prayers from Die Ernsthafte Christenpflicht, benediction, and finally, the closing hymn. Once Schrock makes his exit, the congregation rises. The men replace their hats. The crowd exits the same way they entered, according to age and status. I'm in one of the last groups.